So welcome to the show, Chris. Real quick, who are you and what do you do?
Well, my name is Chris Damhorst. I own Damhorst Toys and Puzzles Incorporated. We're a small toy manufacturing company that's based out of Herman, Missouri, which is basically right in the middle of the United States. And we manufacture everything right out of our location in Herman, Missouri. And we're primarily online retail. We make personalized wooden children's toys. And it was a company that was started by my parents in 1971. So we're over 40 years old right now and still chugging along happily.
Wow. So you basically grew up as a kid into this business, huh?
Yeah, I did. So my parents went full time with this business when I was 8 years old. So they originally started part time in 1971. And they did it out of their basement in a little house just outside of North St. Louis. And then they decided to go full-time in 1976. That's when, you know, I really kind of saw things up close because I remember the lean years. I really do. That, you know, my mom would be kind of upset at the breakfast table coming down in the morning and wondering how things were going to work out. And my dad was telling her that everything's going to be fine. And they just... They had in their mind, and I remember them saying this, is as long as they worked hard, they couldn't fail. They definitely, you know, worked hard, that's for sure, and fine-tuned and found their niche and found their way, because neither one of them were business people at all. But I think they were smart people, and they made the right decisions, didn't take on any debt at all. They just worked really hard, and it ultimately worked out for them. So yeah, I grew up around that. I went off to school, ultimately, and I didn't start right into the business. I had... about 12 years in the corporate world that really helped. I don't think my parents were really super interested in having me come work for them right out of school. I think they wanted me to kind of have a little bit of my own life and kind of develop kind of who I was going to be, I think. Then when my dad started getting sick and ultimately passed away, my mom had some interest in selling the company. And then my youngest sister and I bought it together. That's how we ultimately got into it. And we've owned it for 10 years now. So we took over in 2004. Going into 2014, after this year, will be our 10th year.
So you guys have basically bootstrapped before this term was even probably like the buzzword now, right?
Yeah, they bootstrapped because there was no money. I mean, they, I'll tell you, their first house was financed by the owner of the house. So when they went full time and they needed some more room because they were just in the small basement in their first home, that we moved out to a small farm, which is about 40 miles west of St. Louis. They financed through the owner, and they basically just scrimped and saved. So every show that they did, they do these craft shows, and they would sell their products there because, you know, there was no internet then, and they really didn't have, you know, much money for any kind of mail marketing program. But they could drive out to these shows, you know, afford the entry fee, sell, you know, some of their products, take some orders, you know, make a little bit of money, and then use that for the materials for the next one. And they just slowly, you know, built it up from there. And it was kind of a long haul. And as they went to these shows, they learned, you know, they learned what worked and what markets were better for them. We ultimately started doing shows in Chicago. And that was really kind of a tipping point for us, because Chicago was, you know, a little bit of a higher end market. You know, there was a little bit more disposable income at those craft shows that we went to. And as a result, you know, they could sell more items. So it completely made sense to kind of expand outside of our normal area that we were in. And that ultimately took us as far north as Newport, Rhode Island, down to Florida. We went as far west as Park City, Utah, and all places in between, you know, Georgia and Texas and Arkansas and Oklahoma and Kansas. And it just goes on and on, you know, that we really traveled a lot in those first years. And that was, you know, my parents' marketing plan. That's how they got out to their customers. And we still have customers today that buy from us as a result of those shows that they saw us at, you know, back in the 1980s.
Yeah, like, I'll go into that a little bit later, but it was just really pounding the pavement, kind of getting out there, getting out of the building too, right? Because I guess, did they ever consider like retail going into stores, or was it just like not possible with kind of the finances that was a little bit tight?
They did, actually. In fact, they went with some high-end stores, surprisingly, in some of the earlier years, and that was Saks Fifth Avenue and Neiman Marcus, and also another smaller specialty shop called the Children's Shop. And the problems that they ran into was they were slow paying, and I'm sure there are probably businesses out there that run into the same issue. where, you know, typically terms are net 30, and it was getting like 90, 120 days, you know, in some cases 180 days. At that time, they were a cash flow business. I mean, that's how they, you know, continued to buy materials, you know, from payments from orders or, you know, wholesale accounts. But when they were slow pays, it just it started to break down and fall apart. So they ultimately got away from wholesale. They drummed that into our heads when we were little. I remember, you know, asking why we weren't doing, you know, the Neiman Marcus or Saks Fifth Avenue stuff anymore, and that was because they were a little bit on the slower to pay side. And it took me a little while to get back into wholesale. We do wholesale now, but I went in reluctantly only because of what the experiences that my folks had back a long time ago. But yeah, it was all basically from ground up. No loans. They were very wary about taking on any debt. I don't know that anybody would have lent them any money anyway, you know?
Were you going to these trade shows with them, like the Arts and Crafts Show, when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I have two sisters, and the youngest one, Megan, and I own the company now, and we have a middle sister, Molly. And we all rode in the back of these big box trucks, typically behind the seats of the driver and the passenger. And we went all over with them. And, you know, it was a great experience for me because in some cases we got really busy at the shows. And, you know, I started selling and talking to the customers and bagging up product and answering questions and taking orders. And it really helped me, I think, as a child, kind of just develop the customer service skills that I still use today, and that I was there at the shows. You know, typically customers are like, oh, I remember seeing you at the Coconut Grove Art Festival down in Florida. You know, your parents there. And I said, oh, yeah, I was there too, definitely. So, and we helped with unpacking and setting up the booths. And I'll tell you, it was an unspoken rule that when it started raining at any one of those shows, because, you know, we'd go off and we had other kids that we knew that had families that did shows too. Whenever it started raining, we all better start running back to the booths. And that was true for the other kids because you had to help with the tarps and get everything going. So, you know, don't be slow coming back to the booth when it's raining.
Yeah. One thing, like online now, it's really easy to hide behind a website and on your computer when you're building your online store. So what do you think is the biggest lesson you've learned kind of being out there on the ground with your parents, talking to customers and really interacting?
Yeah, I think that you really have to make yourself accessible, that you have to talk to customers, and that if there's a problem with an order or a product, that, you know, you don't hide behind your employees. You know, I give out my cell phone number to my customers, that, and I tell them if they have any problems at all, if I feel like they're lacking in confidence with our abilities, or if we made a mistake or something along those lines, I want them to know that the owner of the company is heavily involved and that is not afraid to talk to customers. Because I think these days now, so many owners put those responsibilities off on their employees. And I think it says a lot about, you know, a company. Now, we're a small company and I can do that. I understand that, you know, larger companies, that may not make sense. But as the son of the original owner, that it's good for me to talk to these longtime customers because, you know, I think it really creates that connection and makes them think that, hey, you know, I'll buy from these people again, because if I have a problem, I can talk to the owner. He gave me his cell phone number, and that's unique these days. So if it's something that you can do, definitely. I mean, you know, and I've had customers that have been upset you know, sometimes they just want to vent and they want to know that they've been heard. You know, maybe it's something that we did, or maybe it's something that's out of our control. But at least they felt like they talked to somebody who was in charge. And that's really, really important to me.
It almost becomes your advantage too, right? Because big companies can't add this personal touch to the customer service.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Absolutely. In fact, you know, sometimes they're a little bit surprised, because I always identify myself as the owner, and that, you know, if you have any problems at all, please feel free to call me. Here's my direct line. And they're kind of taken back a little bit. They're like, oh, okay, hold on one second, you know, and they'll write it down, and it's great. Because, you know, our customers are repeat customers. Most of them are. That's what we need to make sure that we focus on, is keeping those repeat customers happy, or turning the new customer into a repeat customer. And if there's any problems at all, that you know, that they walk away happy, or at least know they've been heard, and that they can get back in touch with me.
The next question is, how many people actually call you when you give out your cell number like that?
You know, surprisingly, not that many, really. You know, because I'm hoping by the time that they're finished talking with me that their problem's taken care of. And, you know, at first I was a little bit nervous about that, I'll be honest with you, that I'm like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to hand out the number. It's the right thing to do. But am I going to really be sorry for this? And I was like, you know what? I'm doing it. I was surprised. I mean, people really don't, you know, don't really call. And I'm hoping because they're happy and that they haven't had any problems. There's a few that they just know me. We usually talk about the old days, or I tell them a story about my parents or, you know, the company. And I think that that's fun for them. I mean, I have customers that I know by name. Obviously, they call me and I'm like, yeah, how's it going? And, you know, what have you been up to? And I know, their mother's been sick or something. So just it's probably a handful. I bet I could count them all on one hand.
Yeah. All right. So we'll go into that a little bit later. I want to go into your products a little bit. So you guys have been in business for, you know, 40 plus years. So what are your toys and what makes them different?
We're the original manufacturer of the Name Puzzle Stool. And that was what really got the company going. It's a personalized name puzzle stool that basically it sits 9 inches off the ground. It's got four legs. And the child's name is cut into the stool top and the letters of the child's name are removable and they're painted in the primary colors. That really was something new back in the late 70s. And as a result, it really catapulted the company, you know, forward. I think that's really what made us unique. We were personalized then. I don't think a lot of people were doing personalized items back then. My folks were the type of people that wanted to make something that was, you know, going to last a long time. So the things are built like tanks. So as a result, these name puzzle stools have stayed in families and they've stayed with these children all the way up through college. And now we have customers that receive stools when they were a child and they're buying them now for their children. So when they were built strong enough to withstand a childhood. And as a result, because they were personalized, quite honestly, it's hard to get rid of something that's personalized. I mean, you don't just throw it away. And it's something that's, you know, functional too. So I hear stories about, you know, kids in their teens that are using these stools to get up into their closets to get their sweaters down. You know, parents are using them in the kitchen to, you know, reach the high cupboards. So it's functional, it's personalized, it's a memory that they got when their child typically was first born or within their first year or second year. So it's hard to get rid of. So it's kind of like this constant around their home. And whenever they have a new baby that comes into the family or another friend that's having a baby, they see and remember the stool and that's personalized. So it kind of goes above and beyond a little bit on the gift-giving side. And that's really what has kept us in business, I think, all these years, is that, you know, it's something that has lasted, that's a good memory for the families, and is a nice gift to give, because the reception that they get or the feedback they get from the person that they gave it to is really positive. So it makes them feel good giving the gift.
It seems like a very functional product, right? Like, I'm looking at the website now, you could like use it as a regular stool and stuff like that, but you have the names that you can put in kind of in the middle too.
Yeah. I mean, it's an educational thing. And, you know, Terry, you and I talked about this a little bit more, is that having a product that's multifunctional is just huge. You know, it serves more than just one purpose. Kids can learn their colors because we follow the primary color scheme of the rainbow. They learn their name because, obviously the letters are removable. So they learn each letter of their name. And, you know, it was funny because I grew up around this, but when I had my own kids, you know, my son actually knew each color of each letter of his name without me really prompting him. And he had mentioned he was talking about, you know, the red J. I didn't know what he was talking about at first, but then he pointed to his stool and I was like, oh, I said, well, what color is your, you know, the A? And he knew that color. And so they really soak this stuff up. And parents that work with their kids when they're trying to, you know, teach them their names and the colors, I mean, it's just perfect for that. In fact, we had one customer that takes two legs off on one side and it you know, makes the stool kind of tilt down on one edge. And then their baby that's, you know, they can't even walk yet, they put them on their belly in front of the stool and they kind of, you know, pull at the letters, while it's still on the ground before they can walk. So, you know, the kids are just naturally drawn to them. It's amazing.
And the crazy part is, like, once someone grows up, it's kind of hard to throw away because it's kind of like you're throwing away a piece of your childhood, right? Something that's personalized for you, you kind of grew up with as a kid. And I guess it gets really hard to let go.
Well, yeah, we hear these stories too, that these kids will take their stools with them to college. And in some cases, the parents are kind of like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I've heard stories where they wanted to keep them at the house because it reminds, just like you said, I mean, the parents of them when they were babies, but then, you know, the kids remember them because they grew up with them, you know, in their room. So it's a little piece of home that I think they want to take with them to the dorm or, you know, to their first apartment or wherever it might be. So, you know, that wasn't, I don't think, my parents' intention from the beginning. It's something that evolved, you know, on its own, but Yeah, the personalization is really a powerful, powerful thing. It's amazing.
It kind of reminds me of Toy Story 3. I don't know if you saw it, you know, in the end when he has to throw away all his toys or leave it before he goes to college.
Yeah, yeah. I've gone through that experience, you know, when we had to clean out, you know, unfortunately, my mom passed away 2 years ago, and we had to clear out a lot of stuff. And you know, you can't keep it all. I mean, there was so much stuff, and my parents didn't get rid of anything. So, you know, you can totally understand what's the one thing that you're going to keep. And you know, I think the stool has been in that list on that, you know, on that short list anyway.
Martin, so let's go back into the business a little bit. So you mentioned you guys, you know, since you were little kids going to these art fairs, really just pounding the pavement, getting sales. So when did you guys decide to have the online store?
I was in tech at that time in the Silicon Valley. And I had been working for a tech company for a little while. And my mom was really technical too, and she really liked computers and was fascinated by the whole online internet thing. And she knew she needed and wanted to be in that space. So in 1998 is when they actually went live with their first website. And, you know, it was basically a friend that knew how to put it together. And there was no SSL certificate on there either too. And I mean, it was, you had to total your own, you know, total. There was no automatic totaling there. They didn't take credit cards at the time. We had to call the customers back, I think, because the shopping there, you know, there wasn't really a good solid working shopping cart feature. I think at one point too, it was like, you know, they were putting credit card numbers in with no SSL. I mean, those are the Wild West days, right, of the internet in the beginning. Ultimately got an SSL because customers were starting to complain about that. I mean, there were customers out there that knew better than we did. And so that prompted us to get an SSL. We changed the shopping cart around a little bit, and there were, you know, luckily we came across a shopping cart that really worked for us. And that was something that, you know, that we could kind of, you know, fix to the business because we had a lot of options on the products too. So there's some sophistication in that, you know, with a shopping cart.
Did you always want to go into family business since you were young, or because I mean, you mentioned you had a gap there where you worked kind of in the tech space.
Right out of college, I didn't. I think that I kind of wanted to be on my own a little bit. I had worked in the business, you know, typically in the summer times for, you know, for money for school, you know, that kind of thing. You know, it's still your parents, and you know, you're a young adult, and you don't necessarily want your parents as your boss when you come out of school. So, I wasn't raring to get into the business. So as a result, I mean, I knew something was going to have to happen down the road. I guess I wasn't sure exactly what was going to happen. And another thing, too, is my parents weren't exactly begging us to come back. They kind of made it clear that, you know, it wasn't an option right out of school. It was good for us. And I think they really wanted that for us. I think they were a little bit smarter, you know, than myself at the time. And they're like, you know, go out, get a career, get some experience, and we'll see what happens. And then as they got older and things started to change, and, you know, my dad passed away in 2001. And my mom was still running the business, you know, just fine. She was an equal and integral part of the business as he was, that she started to get older and started to realize that, you know, she wanted to retire. And at that point, you know, my wife and I were in a position where we thought, you know, this could be, you know, the right thing for us because we had a really young family at the time. And it was a full buy sell, too. I mean, you know, I think my mom was nervous that we'd get in there and you know, not do a good job or maybe, you know, auger it into the ground because, you know, second generation businesses, I mean, their ability to keep things going is pretty remote and you know, the odds aren't good. And she knew that. And so she was like, I think the best thing for me is just to sell you it directly and put the financing together and let's do this whole thing as a buy sell. And that's what we did. And it worked out. I mean, it really did. It was kind of the best thing for all of us because I think she would have still been in there if she knows she still owned the business and was just turning it over to us. So as a result, she was like, you know, it's going to be kind of an all or nothing for you. And I think she knew that we would be all in then at that point. And essentially we were. So it was good. It was good. It worked out well. Worked out very well.
That's really odd that like you guys had to buy sell because I think like because I'm living in Asia, I think most tend to just pass it along. Kind of there's a different mindset, right? Whereas I think when you're buying it, you have a lot more skin in the game.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, I made sure those payments to her monthly were on time, and you know that we were serious because she would pop in pretty regularly when we first took over. You know, my mom was really conscious of expenses. And in fact, when we first got into the business, I think all the office chairs were broken or, you know, like the most uncomfortable chairs you could ever imagine. And I remember coming in, you know, full time finally, and I was talking to my sister and some of the employees, and I was like, does anybody's bottom hurt as much as mine does? These chairs are the worst. And so one of the first things that we did was we bought all new chairs for the office. And I thought that she was going to come in and maybe kind of reprimand us or give us a little bit of a dirty look. But she usually came in and sat down, you know, with us in the office. And in our office, we don't have individual offices. It's like one big room, and we have these tables. They're not even cubes. It's like this one big communal office. So she would come in and sit down in the chairs, and she sat down. The first thing she said was, wow, these chairs are really comfortable. So she didn't give us too much trouble after that. So, but she was very, very conscious of expenses, was afraid that maybe we wouldn't be as conscious as she was. And when you're in it like that, and you're financed, and you know, you watch your expenses, you know, real carefully, and that's another thing that we really learned from them, watching as the business grew. They were always very conscious about expenses.
How did you guys structure that deal? Like, I'm really curious, because there's one sense where, you know, no one wants to get like the bad side of the deal. Like, how did you guys figure that out?
Let's see. I had been in the, I'd worked for Ford Motor Company for a number of years. So I had seen some buy sells go down with dealerships. So I kind of basically, you know, put it in those terms was that there was some blue sky involved. So there was some value in the company that wasn't there in collateral assets, you know, in physical assets. That was probably the toughest part, is trying to negotiate on, you know, what was fair. And I do have to say that, you know, my mom did give us a lower price than regular market value. She definitely did that. But I think it took her a little while to get comfortable with that, because the negotiations went on for like a year and a half. I mean, at one point I didn't think it was going to happen. I mean, I really didn't. And my wife was like, what's going on with this? And I'm like, I'm not sure we're working at it. So it was sometimes hard to sit down and start to really talk hard numbers, because I don't know if she was like super comfortable with the price that she was giving, or if she was nervous about us taking over. You know, ultimately we came to a price, and that included Blue Sky, and we had a 12-year term, and we're still kind of dealing with that. So we've got, I think, another 2 years left on the deal.
Especially because I think parents don't, you know, the parents wouldn't want to overcharge the kid, but they don't want to just give it to you either. So,
well, and she's thinking about her retirement as well too, you know, I'm sure.
Awesome. All right, so let's move on into the business a little bit. So how big is the whole team now besides you and your sister?
So besides me and my sister, we're at 13 employees, and we have two part-timers out of that 13. So basically, what is that? 11 full-time and then two part-time. And then my sister and myself make 15. Basically for all said total employees.
Yeah. Well, I'm just trying to get a size of your business. Like, is it appropriate to say you guys are kind of like in the 5 million range annual sales, around that ballpark, or?
No, much lower than that. Yeah.
Cause it sounds like a huge operation with like 12, 13 people. So
yeah. It works out great. Yeah. We're not very big. I think people think we're a lot bigger than we are. And I think they're surprised to find out that, that we only have, 13 employees, and that we're kind of in a small shop. And actually, I think I sent you the copy of the company video that I put together. You know, that's a picture of our building is in that YouTube video. You know, they're not fancy digs. I was a little bit nervous about that, because I think people have a perception in their head of what we look like and how we operate. And you never want to burst that bubble, because it's always kind of, I'm sure it's different than what the reality is. I just remember seeing some businesses that, I had a picture in my head of what they were like, and then I saw their actual facility, and I was like, not as nice as I thought.
So. Changes your image of the whole thing.
It does a little bit, and that makes me nervous, because, you know, I want to make sure that everybody obviously has a positive image of the company. But, that's a function of expenses. I mean, you know, you don't go out and buy a big brand new building with a big fancy lobby. You know, a body shop works just fine. Keep your costs down.
Yeah. Like when I was in China visiting my supplier, you know, you look at like those Gucci, Louis Vuitton actual factories. I mean, there's an image of what you see in the marketing material, right? But then when you actually go there, you're like, oh, it's not that special.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So for sure.
And so you're saying how the business is mostly online now. Like, how does the breakdown work with wholesale? Like, is it like an 80-20 split between online and offline, or how does that work out?
Yeah, it's pretty close. I think that's a real close number. Probably, I mean, if we really got down, I think it's like 85, you know, 15 for online versus office or phone orders. And then of that online, our wholesale is really pretty small. I think we're only about 5%, 6% wholesale. So we only have, like, we have one big wholesale account and then a few small ones that are, you know, kind of mom and pop, for lack of a better word, that are online retailers, but do well, you know, online. And they, you know, they do well for their business, and they sell a lot of our products too. But we really only have one big, you know, online wholesale account, and again, it accounts for kind of a small. I've never really wanted to be heavy in wholesale for a number of reasons. You know, your business then is so based on theirs. Like, if we lost the big wholesale account that I mentioned, you know, it wouldn't kill us. But if we were, you know, 90% wholesale and three of those wholesale accounts were a majority of our business, I would be a lot more nervous than I am. So it makes it kind of nice. And, you know, if those guys go out of business, which, you know, they do frequently, you know, that would really put us in a tough position if we were a majority wholesale. Not to mention, you have to make a lot more products in order to, you know, really create the revenue stream, because, you know, you're selling at such a discounted rate that, you know, at some point it stops making sense.
Yeah. And also the cash flows you were talking about, how they have the net 30, 120, sometimes they're late. These big organizations, it's delayed to like half a year. That's just crazy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And we had that situation last year, maybe 2 years ago. I can't remember exactly. And I was getting relatively concerned. And because the first thing they do when they start having a slow period is they stop paying. You know, they stop paying their suppliers. And, you know, we were on that list and, you know, everything got squared away, but if we had walked away or they had walked away, it's a considerable sum of money. It's just tough, but you know, that's another reason why I really like retail a lot better and you know, just more diversified and it's harder to go out of business.
Cause you got to pay your manufacturers, your suppliers and everything on the team too. Like, you guys have 12, 13 people.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And one thing, you know, we're really proud of is we've never had to lay anybody off. You know, we've never had to, you know, push somebody's paycheck out a week because we couldn't make payroll. You know, we're really, really conscious about that. And you know, we play all of our, it's amazing how many incentives are available now when you pay on time. You know, I can get an extra 2 and 2.5, maybe 5% off to pay on time. I'm like, oh my gosh, that, you know, that's the reality that's out there. I'm not used to that because we usually pay all of our bills on time. So we're not in a situation where we have a big accounts receivable because, you know, most of our orders are placed online before we actually make the item with a personalized item. Unfortunately, we really need to take payment first before we make it. Once it's made, it's not something that's easily resellable. So, you know, so usually our transactions are point of sale, and we don't, you know, we don't have those issues.
It's not because you get the money from the customer first, right? So you're essentially almost in a positive cash flow cycle, unless some wholesaler just is slow and kind of drags you down from that side.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah, so their credit card gets processed, you know, after the order is placed, and then we make it, and our turnaround time is usually 2 weeks. So yeah, right, our accounts receivable is basically just what we show for our wholesale accounts. And even then, that's, you know, it's a small percentage, and they've all done, you know, pretty well. And in most cases, our smaller online retail, they have to put a credit card in too. So we typically don't have net 30 for them, that it's a point of sale transaction too, where they put their credit card in. You know, they're small enough that their orders come in kind of onesie twosies. So we just basically have them enter in through the website and go from there.
Gotcha. And so over the years, like, how have you guys kept competitors out of the market from like ripping off your ideas?
We haven't. What happened was the first copycats that came out were actually ex-employees of the business. So what happened was is that my parents were, I don't think they thought that would happen, and it did. We had hired friends or family members, so it was kind of a family that did it. And they were able to get in and get a hold of the checkbook information, found all the supplier information, and basically just started up literally like a mile and a half down the road from us, from our original location. That was frustrating for my parents. I know they really had a hard time with it. And they were showing up at the same craft shows that we were showing up at, and they, it was basically just a complete copy of what was going on. And then over the years, the same things, you know, have happened. We've had, you know, a number of other, there's probably four, there's three in the US, I know, three main competitors that make exactly what we make. And then there's one in Canada too. I did patent one item, and my experience with that really wasn't that great, to be honest. It was really expensive. Even if someone copied it, I would have to go after them legally, and it would probably cost me as much, you know, to go after them legally as probably what they would probably take, you know, whatever market share you might want to say from it. So the only hopes that you can, you know, have from a patent, I think, is that you're going to try to scare someone off. But, you know, if they're making money with it and the legal expenses are going to fit within the profit margin, you know, they're going to do it. And meanwhile, it creates a lot of stress and it's time consuming for you and it's expensive. And anytime lawyers get involved, it's just, it affects the bottom line so quickly, you know, so try to avoid legal action, you know, at any cost that you can. So, you know, we did patent once and I don't know, I don't know that I would do it again, really, for the expense that was involved. I mean, the product does well for us. It's actually our locomotive stool is the one that I ended up patenting. And that's the one where the train basically, you know, goes around the track. So that one is patented. I mean, it's got a registered patent with it. But, you know, and that's another thing, too, is the lawyers come in and they quote you a price for the patent. And then before you know it, that price is doubled, you know, and you're like, wait, what happened? And I ended up dropping the guy, too, because, I mean, every twist and turn, he was like, well, do you want the international patent, too? And I'm like, no, I don't. I'm just fine in the U.S. And the final stretch is I actually ended up registering it with the patent office myself because that was going to be like another, I don't know, $1,000 or something to file two pieces of paper that I called an 800 number. And, you know, so you just have to be careful. And it's, again, watching those expenses. You know, how much can you do yourself? And I've done a lot of stuff myself, sometimes to my detriment. You know, there are times when I've wasted time. But I think more often than not, doing it yourself, learning it yourself, if it's something that you're going to use down the road, it's worth the time investment to teach yourself how to do it. That's really been my experience, and you know, to try to keep those expenses down, and so far it's worked fairly well.
Yeah, like I see your website, you've actually turned this into a marketing kind of strategy where you guys have like the original manufacturer of the puzzle stool, right? Rather than you kind of just separating yourself from the copycats by saying that.
We're trying to say that, you know, we've been around a long time, you know, we've been doing this a long time, that we're family owned and operated. The stories and the customer comments that we put on there, I need to really kind of promote those a little bit more because they're unsolicited and they're awesome. And sometimes they really just, you know, surprise me that, you know, they talk about the quality and how long. I mean, we're really moving into the second generation. That's one thing where, you know, my phone has really been ringing a lot more. I'll just tell you a quick story is that our original phone number that we put on the bottom of our products was not a toll-free number because they couldn't afford a toll-free number at the time. It was just our regular home number, our house number. And that number went out on products for years and years. And then probably, I want to say like 10 or 15 years after they started the company, the area codes changed. You know, just like most metropolitan areas, right? The towns or the area grew up and it got so big that they had to create another area code. And that's what they did for our area. So we actually lost the original number that we had for the business because that was a 314 area code, which was more St. Louis. Anyway, what happened was is that we, you know, we had thought we should probably try to get that number back because there are probably customers that are still using that number to try to get in touch with us. So we track the number down, we call the guy, and he's like, yeah, these people have been calling me, asking me if I make wooden children's toys, and I keep telling them no. And so we ended up, asking him if he'd release the number. He said we would, and so we ended up getting it, and I made that my cell phone number. So I get calls from customers that have ordered literally 30 years ago, and they're like, oh, I'm so glad you're still in business. You know, I flipped the stool over for my son who's 31 now, and this number was on the back, and I thought, I'm just going to call it to see. and they get me directly, and I can tell them the whole story and do that. So, you know, that's been a huge factor too, is that consistency with staying in touch with our old customers through that number. So that relationship over that, you know, that 30 years, it's starting to come back around again because their kids are having kids or they're having grandkids now, and they want to get in touch with us.
So. Wow. That's crazy. That it blows my mind. Cause a lot of stores I talk to, like, they're under 5 years old probably, and still kind of bootstrapping, or kind of when you're like a second generation business, it's a crazy perspective you have than most guests I have.
Yeah, yeah, right. I mean, starting up now, because back then, I think when my parents were starting the business, there were toys out there, obviously, but there were some major players, and, you know, a lot of it was the plastic stuff, but, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of wooden children's toys out there. There was a few, you know, but nowadays, my goodness, I mean, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with Melissa and Doug. It's a corporation now, and they have a huge line of products from, you know, low quality to high quality. So, you know, they're not heavily personalized. But we, you know, that's our base that we've cultivated that has kept us in business all these years. Do you know what I mean? It's that repeat business and all those stools that are out there in the homes now, you know, most of them haven't been thrown away, and we're going into the second generation now too. So, you know, we don't have to compete heavily with, the plastic segment, one, because we're wood, and two is that over the 40 years, you know, we have these relationships with these customers, and it's really not us, the company, it's our product. I talk to customers on a regular basis daily, but the relationship is with our product. That's what they like. And that's why they keep coming back or why they keep referring. If you're talking to other businesses out there and you're developing a product, it's like, you know, do you have that wow factor? Do you have that multidimensional factor? Do you, you know, you have to factor that in. I mean, marketing, you know, social media, all that, sure, that's important. But I tell you, you know, it's the dog food scenario. Have you ever heard that example?
Kind of, yeah. Like, I've heard a strategy called, like, table selection, right? Like, when you're playing poker, like, you have to sit at the right table, because really that depends, like, 80, 90% of how you perform. It's kind of like when you choose a product. You know, you want to make something that has a wow factor, like what you're talking about, right? Instead of just some generic kind of plastic toy that's out there in the mass market.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there's a story about the dog food where it's like, oh, the dog food wasn't selling very well. Well, they changed the marketing, you know, then they changed the packaging. You know, then they changed the, the management within the company and all that. And it, you know, and ultimately what it was, the dogs just didn't like the food. You know, the dogs didn't like the dog food. They didn't eat it. So, you know, you really got to start with the product first. And that's going to take care of a lot of your other problems that you ultimately might have when you're starting a business.
There's another saying where they say, you can polish a turd, but it's still a turd, right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, if anybody's out there with startups or, you know, your current product, and I think that's what we're trying to do too, is that, you know, there are copycats out there, and we have customers that tell us, they're like, oh, well, there are other stools out there too, you know? And I was like, yeah, no, I know. But look at the quality, you know? I mean, make sure, because we're not the cheapest one out there, that's for sure. And the reason why we're not is because our materials don't allow us to offer that low retail price. But you really do get what you pay for. And we've purchased all of our competition's products, and we have them all. And we look at them, you know, they're not going to hold up. I mean, the materials that they use allow for them to offer it at a lower retail price. And that's what we try to get across too. Our letters are thicker and blockier, and customers have told us that's what they like. So we stay with that. I can make a cheaper stool, but I won't. Because it's a formula that works. It's, you know, they want that same product, that same experience that they had 30 years ago. You know, you don't change that. You keep that consistent. And unfortunately, in some cases, that means a little bit higher price, you know, up against our competition. But, you know, I'm not gonna cave on that, unfortunately.
Yeah. So over 40 years, like, if you look at your customer base, what percent has been repeat purchase? If you even have an insight to this,
we're probably in the 30 to 40% range, I gotta say, because when a customer places an order with us over the phone, when we pull up their name, we pull up their whole record. So we immediately see how many stools that they've ordered from us before. And you know what? We're probably higher than that, because almost every time they have at least one or two, and in some cases they have over 100. In fact, we had a customer the other day had 163 orders in the system. And that system only goes back to 1996 when we switched over to that customer database. So it's probably higher than that if you go all the way back. So, you know, that again goes back to our customer base and you know, all those shows that we did back in the 70s and the 80s and partly in the 90s. It built that base and then it fanned out from there because somebody comes over to their house and they see the product and they're like, oh, that's cool. And they look over, you know, and they order it again. So every product is almost like a mini advertisement out there for us.
And also when one kid grows up with it, they have their own kids. Usually they'll have more than one, right? They'll have two and then they'll buy two stools and then it kind of grows from there too, I guess.
Yeah. And one thing, you know, you'll notice too is that when you start having kids, typically, all your friends are having kids at the same time, too, or within a year, 2 years, or 3 years of yourself. So, you know, you're going to baby showers, and you know, if you got this as a kid, then you gave it to your own child, or your parents gave it to, you know, your child, their grandparents, then you end up giving it to your friends, because it's just part of it. And, you know, we have customers all the time that say, this is a tradition in our family. We have, you know, customers that call up and say, has somebody else ordered this? Because I want to be the first one to order it. And we had a problem with duplicate orders. And we had to come up with a database that's a living database that gets updated every day that we cross-check shipping addresses. So all the orders, let's say for today, will get cross-checked against all the orders that have been placed within the last 2 years. And we'll see if we've sent anything to that shipping address in the past. And then we can pull that order up and look at it. And if it's the same item, then we call the customer back and say, hey, someone already ordered this item for this person. Would you like to switch out, or we can, you know, cancel the order, give you your money back? You know, what do you want to do? Because we ran into this problem where customers would call up and they're like, I got two of these and I want to return one. Well, you know, it might have the name Sybil on it or a name that we can't resell. So we're really in a tough spot. We're like, well, we can't, you know, it's a personalized item. We can't really take it back and give you a full refund because it's not something we can resell. So the strategy was to try to nip that in the bud before it happened. And, you know, before it was kind of like, oh, isn't this funny? It was a novelty at first. And this was 10 years ago. Well, now we're at the point where, you know, the kids that received them are really having kids now. So it's happening a lot. It was happening a lot. Now we've cut it down. We still have some that get by because, you know, it's just weird stuff. Like if they put apartment number or, you know, a pound sign for number, the number sign, then, you know, it won't match perfectly with the address, right? So we've had some that sneak through. And if it's something that we think we can resell, we'll take it back. Because I never like saying no. I hate saying no because, again, it goes back to that customer base that, you know, that's almost our marketing is that I'd rather take the hit on the stool, take it back and have a happy customer than someone who's going to go out and not be happy and not spread the word because we are a word of mouth company. So, you know, if we're going to advertise, let's advertise by making that customer happy and hopefully they go out and tell their friends and you know, we continue that message.
Because you have a real network effect built into your products when friends are telling their friends and kind of parents are giving it to their kids and they're having kids now. And
yeah, and it's babies. I mean, babies are so powerful. I mean, it's such a big event in people's lives that, you know, they're really looking for something unique. And something personalized for a baby is just gigantic, right? Because they're new to the world. The name is new. You know, everything is changing. The grandparents, you know, they're excited because, you know, in some cases it's the first or second grandchild. The parents are excited. You know, aunts and uncles are excited. It's a new member of the family. It's just a big event. And, you know, you're right in the middle of that with your product. So there's a lot of talk going on about what did the child get and what was the most favorite gift or, you know, what was the cutest or, you know, all that. So it's a huge, gigantic event.
All right. So this brings me into kind of like a marketing aspect of the business. So do you guys invest in like SEO, any pay-per-click, or is it mostly like through word of mouth?
I did pay-per-click for a while and I did it with Facebook and I did it with Google and it just didn't pay off for us. I really think that at that point we were stepping out of our normal circle that we work in. And then we were really competing with the big boys at that point, you know, with the pay-per-click. And we went into it, like I did print marketing and I spent a ton of money on it in one city. I remember it was Phoenix. And I thought, okay, I'm really going to go heavy. We're going to run an 8-month campaign. We're going to spend a lot of money and we're going to see what happens. And it was just a dud. You know, breaking through that noise is so difficult that by doing it with pay-per-click, I mean, I know that I wasn't getting my money back on pay-per-click. I mean, I wasn't even breaking even. And with the Facebook ads, I was getting, you know, some likes, but it wasn't translating into conversions and definitely not into the money that I was putting into it. And that's when I really, you know, decided that we're going to have to focus on our existing base heavily. And that if I'm going to spend this money on, you know, marketing or pay-per-clicks or anything like that, I would much rather spend it on, you know, a customer that, you know, got duplicates and we're just going to take it back and give them full credit back. Do you know what I mean? That we're just going to take care of problems. Like customer gave us the wrong address, the incorrect address. Well, if the package comes back to us, we have to charge them $12 to reship it back out. I mean, that's our cost. So we eat that now, you know, because people expect that and they're unhappy when that happens. So I would much rather take that money and put it toward customer satisfaction because I think it will go further for me than a pay-per-click. If you're in a heavily niche market, then pay-per-click might work, but it's from the money standpoint, it just didn't really work for us. So all of our focus really is on our base and making sure that our base is happy and that they have a way to, you know, tell their friends and family about us and that we're accessible and that our information is out there, you know, on Pinterest or Facebook or Google Plus or, you know, anything like that, whatever platform they might use, but we're not actively going after it with dollars.
You guys are playing the long ball game where you're saying, all right, we'll take this money, improve the customer experience in the payoff that somewhere down the line, he'll tell his friends, you know, he'll kind of be an advocate for us rather than actually finding him with a dollar through an ad.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because I'm really concerned that we're out there in front of people that just are not our customer, you know, that, and I know you can segment it, you know, a little bit, but you know, there might be people out there that see the ad for sure and that definitely click on it. But, you know, you look at our bounce rate and it's, you know, it's super short. I mean, they're like, oh, no, this isn't for me. Boop, I'm off. You know, so, but meanwhile, you know, it just cost you whatever, $1.50, $2, $3 a click for that. And, you know, you're not getting that money back. That's totally gone. So if you're going to risk dollars, I'd rather risk it on customers that already know us and that, you know, are in a situation like, you know, we really need to do more high touch stuff. And we've started to do that, you know, to get in touch with customers directly. And, you know, cause there are real advocates out there and to make sure that they're super happy. And and stay in touch that way. That would be money better spent.
Yeah, because it's a lot easier to get someone that's bought from you to buy again, or just to continue the relationship too.
Oh yeah, yeah. And you know, it's just common sense too that it's so expensive to get a new customer. You know, it's so much cheaper to take care of an existing customer that has already found you, has already taken the chance on you, has already purchased from you, than to go out and get a brand new, never heard of you customer before. That's expensive. Yeah. So once you have them, make sure, my philosophy, make sure that you take care of them. And I think so many businesses don't do that. It just doesn't, I don't understand it at all. You know, they do a lot of work to get you all the way in, and then somebody seems to mess it up at the very end point. Do you know what I mean? So
what are some ways you guys nurture the relationship and kind of keep the customers as big fans?
Well, you know what we really started doing, this was in the last year, is I started putting handwritten notes together for customers. And I'll tell you, that wasn't my idea. I follow a lot of the social media blogs and you know, the people that are out there and listen in, much like your show, Terry. I mean, you know, honestly, there's some great stuff on there that, you know, you pick up the bits and pieces that are going to work for you and then you go from there. So anyway, handwritten notes was something that I heard about and I'm like, you know what, I'm going to try it. And it's amazing. You know, it's absolutely amazing because in the digital age now, you know, a text, you know, even an email is not as personal as a handwritten mailed letter, because you know someone pulled out a piece of paper, pulled out a pen, took the time aside, hand wrote it out, and then signed it, mailed it, dropped it in a mailbox. You know, there's a lot of effort in that in today's age. That's something that has just, you know, customers have just really loved. We don't do that, you know, we don't do that many. I would like to do more. I need to do more. Another thing that we do too is personal emails back too. Like I'll type the email myself, and so if customer says something in their in the comment section of their order that's like, oh, I bought from you 30 years ago. I remember seeing your parents at a show, you know, in Kansas City. You know, I always make sure that my office manager, and she's really good about saying, here, this is an order. In fact, I did one today, this morning. I had one this morning. She gave me an order ID number. I looked it up, found the customer's email, put an email together that basically said, hey, I just wanted to take a moment to thank you so much for the comments that you put together. You know, my mom and dad were probably the ones that you met at the show in Kansas City. You know, I can't tell you how grateful we are that you think of us again and again. And if there's anything that we can do for you, you know, please let me know. You know, here's my direct number. I usually throw my number in there. Or email me, and then I sign it, you know, Chris Damhorst, owner, Damhorst Toys and Puzzles Incorporated. And you know, probably 70% of the time they reply back and they're like, thank you so much for your note. You know, I really, really appreciate it. So I guess I consider that kind of high touch too. And very, very important, because nobody does that today. I mean, it's so simple and it's so powerful, and it doesn't cost me anything. And it's just the right thing to do, you know, to maintain that relationship, to say, hey, we're here for you, you know, and that's what sales are all about. It's what kind of relationship do you have with your customers? And I want to have a good one. I hope we have a good one.
Yeah. Like, I think the barrier or like the bar is set so low now that when you just do something as simple as this, it's like, wow. Cause like when I sold my first batch of wallets,
oh yeah,
it was only like 30 units, but I wrote like a, you know, thank you, like a, you know, 4 or 5 sentence thing. And then when I actually met some of my first customers, they're like, they already knew me already. And it was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you said, the bar is set so low that it's easy. I mean, it's not even hard. You know, you got to take the time to do it, but you know, it's so well worth it. And, you know, you're establishing a relationship and you're just putting in their minds that memory, you know what I mean, of that person. Because I think people want to help small businesses. They want them to succeed. And if you're doing the right things, they'll come back to you again because they feel good about buying from you, because they, you know, they know it's not a heartless, you know, corporation that they're sending their money to. And if they have a problem, they can get satisfaction. And, yeah, you know, that's huge. That's huge.
Yeah, like I tell people, if you can't personalize everything else, doesn't make sense. But what you can do is you could print out like a thank you card and then just sign like 1,000 of these and stuff them in every order, right? Like, it's not like a written note, but at least knowing that you've hand signed it, you know, it's a certain gesture there too.
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah. And you've probably seen these auto pens where, you know, they try to make the signature look really real, where, you know, it's like a different color or whatever. I look at those closely and I'm like, did they really sign this? And when I look at it and I figure out that they didn't really sign it, it takes all of the sincerity out of it.
But like when you really sign it, like I do it with my thank you cards, like signing 1,000 really only takes you like an hour, and it's really easy. You just sign it and, you know, they don't all look the same, but that's the point of really signing things too.
So. Right, right. Yeah. I mean, you took the time to sit down to sign the card and send it out. And that means that you're thinking about your customer and that you want that relationship there. And, you know, and it's just the right thing to do. I mean, and it, like you said, it's so simple, so simple.
Are you expecting your kids to eventually take over the business too? Like, kind of like yourself, or haven't thought that far yet?
I have not thought that far ahead. I, you know, cause my sister has 2 kids, as well. So, you know, we've talked about it a little bit, but, you know, I'll tell you, that's so far down the road, and to predict it or try to predict it is just, I just think it's an activity in futility that, you know, you just wait till it comes, you cross that bridge when it comes to it. And, you know, if it works out, great. And if it doesn't, I just want them to be happy as kids. And, you know, do what they love, and try to support that any way that I can. And of course my nephew and my niece too. So it's, you know, we'll cross that when we come to it. There are other things that I like to think about besides that. I could go crazy thinking about that.
So I'm on your Facebook page. I saw Kim Kardashian got one for her baby. to earlier in June. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, we've it's great. We've had some celebrities. I was a little bit nervous about putting Kim Kardashian on there. Now she's not the, I don't know. We've had a lot of celebrities that have helped us. In fact, in 2011, we had Blue Ivy, which was Beyonce and Jay-Z's new baby. And we got a lot of media coverage for that, and that was really interesting to see how that kind of played out. It was really helpful. A lot of local media, and then they picked up. But it was really a lesson on how media works, because what'll happen is, St. Louis did the three main St. Louis channels did stories on it, and then what happens is their affiliates in different cities will pick up that same story, modify it to fit their format, and then replay that story. It was a lesson to me is that if you get local coverage, it doesn't necessarily stay local, because if it's with NBC or ABC or CBS, another news organization in, like, we had the story pop up in Texas, in Kansas, I think one, like, Illinois. So a lot of times these other news affiliates are looking at these other stories, and then, because they're, the same, main station, the same major affiliate, then they'll pick up that story and do it. So it can really mushroom on you quickly with just a local story. So if, think about trying to get more local stories done on you, that a little bit more personal interest kind of thing, and it can spread beyond your area. So that was really, really helpful. But it's been nice because, like we did David Letterman's kids and Conan O'Brien and Adam Sandler and we did... Tom Cruise's daughter Suri, that stool actually showed up on an episode of Oprah when she was interviewing him in his house in I think it was out in Idaho somewhere. So that's been really helpful because it'll start to bounce around in there, and again, it's kind of a word of mouth type of thing. And Dana Carvey was a big customer of ours for a long time and still is. So that kind of stuff is fun. You know what I mean? And hopefully sets us apart too. To say, this is kind of the premium, of the other items that are out there from our competition anyway.
All right, well, thanks again for taking the time to speak with us today, Chris, and thank you, listener, for tuning in. You guys can find out more about Damn Horse Toys at damnhorsetoys.com. And once again, Chris, thank you for coming on, and we'll keep in touch.
No, thank you, Terry. Really appreciate it. It was fun and went really quick. I didn't think it was anywhere close to an hour and a half.
To get more information about running an online store, visit our website at buildmyonlinestore.com. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Build My Online Store podcast.